everyone. Welcome back to the Moz House Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter B. Gunn, and I'm here with our alumni guest, Bo Bree Ray. And so, how are you doing today?
Hi, Hunter. I'm so excited to be here. It's a steamy, thundery Friday afternoon in New York City. And I'm thrilled to kind of continue the Moz House experience via this podcast with you.
Yeah. I am too. It's a great addition to like the your stay, I guess. Even though it was a while ago, however long, it's nice to revisit it, I've learned.
Oh yeah, definitely.
So this will ask everyone the first question. As always, so how would you describe your art?
Oh, that's a great question. Hard one, actually. it could be either really simple or complicated, right?
Yeah.
My art practice, I would describe as quite simply based on dance, drawing, and ecology. And that's pretty in line with the work that I was able to do at the Moz House residency. I have danced now for at least, I would say, 20 years or more of my life. So it's definitely like a through line and a spine that has followed me in my creative work. And then my visual art practice kind of evolved as I began choreographing more work and began doing a lot of sketches and figural drawings and kind of exploring that part of my work. So my master's program was more in the visual art area. And so it's kind of interesting because in terms of grants or like proposals and stuff, everyone always wants you to pick a category. And I've somehow stubbornly been able to kind of traverse both for throughout my career. So that's actually something that I really hold dear and think is important. And I guess a term that encompasses that would be intersectional or intersectionality. And that leads also to ecology, which is something that I'm really devoted to, both in my teaching and my art practice and in my life and my work. Ecology being, you know, the study of relationships between living beings and things. And so that definitely also came through in the Moz House work and setting. And we can talk more about that in the podcast, but I think that gives a general idea. Yeah. I work a lot with, in drawing with works on paper, ranging from, you know, letter size to huge, more kind of trace or gestural drawings of several yards or meters. Also some work on fabric, canvas and silk, and, yeah, and a lot of performance and, Jeremy and I collaborated on a dance film while I was there as well, and that was largely thanks to his support and his vision and his equipment too. So yeah, it was a very exciting time. Lots of unexpected work and inspiration.
You do all sorts of stuff. Pretty cool. I have a question about the dancing. Have you ever? So I'm a little upset. I missed it because I'm a horrible dancer, like one of the worst probably, but I have been trying to learn. Yeah, very open to learning. I mean, I even suck at my own tribal dances. I don't know what it is. I just don't have the technique for some reason. My athletic ability does not translate to dancing. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
I think there's some African proverb that says, like, if you can talk, you can sing. If you can walk, you can dance or something. So I mean, yeah. I don't believe that, but...
Okay. I can dance. It's just people will question what's going on.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And I do dance now. It's just strange.
Dancing is pretty universal, but yeah, there's... I guess there's different degrees to which it articulates in various settings or something like that.
You can really tell when someone's good at dancing, you can really appreciate it. And when someone's bad at dancing, you can also really appreciate it, but for different reasons. So maybe our art is a little similar, but very different. Okay. So you have a lot of different mediums. Do you have a favorite?
I think it depends on the project, where I head to first, and different media kind of support different directions. So I guess as an example for the drawings and the works on paper that I did in the residency, I focused a lot on creating natural pigments from the soil and the shells, the wampum dust that was gifted to me by Shane Weeks. And I just found the fact that the land is and has been unsurrendered for so long really powerful. So for that idea and concept and that kind of amplification of the Shinnecock land, it made sense to work visually, and turn to drawing and to visualize that story and that material through that medium. And then for the dance film, it's called Les Parages, which is parage is a word in French which means kind of alternately a shoreline, boundary. Sometimes it can mean a neighborhood, and I was interested in how the shoreline is ever expanding and receding, but also there's also like social shorelines in Southampton where the tribal nation territory and then the outside world, let's call it the colonial capitalist America that exists outside it. There's a very clear line, but it's also quite blurred, right? Like there's there's intersections, and the Shinnecock folks also exist within Greater America, and so I was interested in that. And for those ideas, it felt really right to dance them somehow. There's so much power in embodying, I guess, ideas like that. And one of the main ideas of that dance piece too was that the indigenous belief that souls move into the body from the east and exit the body from the west. This was something that also I learned from Shane. And just something like that, I thought would be really beautiful to express through movement and the body. So, yeah, I guess to answer your question, I don't know if there's a favorite one, but there's definitely like a right one for each piece and each direction. And I guess I feel lucky that I can kind of choose, I guess, and I have this vocabulary. It's been strange during the pandemic too, because the movement was so reduced, and it was very, like, as everyone knows, we were all living these very tiny lives. So it was also really cool at Ma's house to be able to dance outdoors. That was something new. Jeremy and I filmed the dance on Westwoods Beach, which is spectacular and beautiful. So it was such a privilege to dance on this unsurrendered, unceded shoreline. I had been drawing a lot during the pandemic. It's something that we can all do kind of individually. But it was really nice in the residency to collaborate with Jeremy outside and dance again.
Yeah, wow. Very well said. That's an interesting, interesting take on it. Different art for different things. You just know which one to do. Okay, so how did you discover Ma's house?
How did I discover Ma's house? I don't remember. I don't know if there was one moment. I was aware of Jeremy's work. I'm a New York City-based artist, but I've spent a lot of time out east, and I think I had seen his work in some shape or form in some exhibition. And then, I think like most things, it was probably a friend, sent me something on Instagram or said, "Hey, did you hear about this residency?" Sorry, this is a horrible answer. I wish I
Oh,
had a
it's
more
okay.
nice story.
Okay, I mean,
But
it's real.
yes, so yeah, sorry for this disappointing story. You can edit this out if it's just boring, but yeah, so I when I found out about it, I was immediately like, this is so exciting, because I, to be completely honest, which I think is what this podcast is supposed to be about, I had been very hesitant to put myself in residency spaces because they did feel very white. And yeah, I mean, I don't really know how to explain that feeling other than, I come from a family of academic immigrants, and like this idea of taking time for your own work, and it is a residency of vacation. There was like maybe some kind of like immigrant type stigma attached to that as well. But if you look at the rosters of a lot of residencies that maybe are desirable, I would say 9 out of 10 of the artists that are there have been historically white, right? So it didn't feel like a space that I particularly was welcome to. And then the fact that it's also on, Shinnecock Tribal Nation territory is so fantastic, and and such a privilege to be able to experience life there. So I was like, this is a no-brainer. I want to apply. And yeah, it was thrilling to receive Jeremy's email. It was, I think it was just before, during Yan Yan's residency, and I do think I told her about Ma's house as well. So yeah, I don't know if that's exciting or
That's
anything,
interesting.
but
Wow. Oh, I see. I see. I'm actually, you mentioned like all the roster people, so I was like, oh, let me give it a look. And it is very interesting seeing like our roster looks very different than most rosters you would see at artists in residence places. It's
Yeah,
all POCs.
absolutely.
It's very, very cool. I've never looked at it like that. It's pretty amazing. Yeah, sorry, technical difficulties, everybody. I somehow kicked myself from the call. What a horrible producer. I'm gonna send this to my editor. My editor better fix it. I am the editor, so I'll have to fix it myself. Okay, so right back in. Our last question was, how did you discover Mouse House? Okay, so how does your way of making art change when you're on a residency, when, or I guess against when you're at home?
Well, Ma's House was my first artist residency,
Oh,
which I
cool.
think makes sense based on what I just shared. And I went in really not knowing what to expect. I was making a lot of work through 2020, and then in 2021, I feel like I kind of hit a bit of a wall in the summer. So I remember telling Jeremy, is it all right if it, are there any requirements to make work? Like, would it be acceptable if it was more of like a research residency and stuff? And I remember him saying, there's no pressure, but you'll be surprised, or you might be surprised when you get here. And that was definitely the case. I can't speak about other residencies, but in this instance, I definitely felt a bit of being called into power. And I think
Oh.
that was thanks to Jeremy's warm welcome. The space is beautiful. You feel very supported. Also, I think the format of the individual artist staying in that concentrated time is really great. I made so much work in the month that I was there. It was probably the equivalent to I don't know, maybe 6 months or so, kind of outside, when you're in your life and, taking care of all the things. And I was still teaching concurrently at Parsons during the residency. So it wasn't entirely a break from other work, but just having all that space and time, knowing that it was devoted and reserved for my practice, felt really empowering. So, yeah, I mean, and I don't know if that would be the same across all residencies, but presumably that's the point of residencies.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were definitely some qualities of Moz House that I think are quite special. And yeah.
It's really amazing you're able to get the equivalent of 6 months of work done in 1 month. That's well, I've even noticed that working now that I'm working at Moz House. I feel like my frequency of things coming out is now I've never made 14 things in 1 month or anything like that. Now it's just condensed and I'm constantly thinking of new ideas. It's a good it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, just to, I guess, give a little context, there was a series of drawings called Menuis. Those were like a series of, I think, 12 or 13 drawings that we showed 9 of them, like a large scale natural pigment painting, two other kind of more what I call corporalities, like large scale dance drawings, and then the dance film. So yeah, I guess even just in terms of volume, if I was making one of those works per month outside of a residency, that would even be a lot too, so
Yeah,
yeah.
that would be on.
Yeah, so
Yeah.
when I went into Moz House, we weren't planning on having a show or anything at all, actually. And then it like the momentum just hit so quickly. So yeah, I think we just agreed, hey, there's so much work being shown, let's do a solo show, let's do it. So
Oh.
yeah, I love it when things kind of happen like that. It's
Yeah.
organic and fresh.
Okay, so speaking of art, since that's the whole podcast, I've been this kind of a new question I've been adding to the podcast recently, but what do you think is the most important personality trait for an artist?
Oh, that's a nice question. Personality trait. There's like two that come to mind. Maybe I
Sure.
could do two.
Same both, yeah.
I would say simultaneous wonder and stubbornness.
Those are good ones.
Yeah, I think those two together kind of have the capacity to create something
It's a
powerful.
simultaneous wonder. I've never heard that before. That's
Wonder and
a new vocabulary I'm
stubbornness.
going to use.
Yeah, because I mean, I think wonder or inspiration or these things are really important, and having a different perspective on what everyone else sees. And then there's also just the act of making art, which it takes a lot of time and effort, and so I think having that grit or some level of kind of stubbornness that this is important kind of is sometimes the key thing to somebody sitting down and like doing that drawing versus just being like, ah, I don't know, I'll just do the dishes, or yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I have two questions that I think would be good to follow up that, but I'm just gonna have to pick one, I think. Okay. So what work that in your entire career are you most proud of?
Oh my goodness, these are nice, juicy questions. I think I will also respond maybe with a more enigmatic answer, It will always be the one that follows. You know what I mean? I think the beauty of being an artist is that you can evolve, and having like trophies from the past are not necessarily that interesting to me. Like I'm definitely proud of the work I did at Ma's house. I'm proud of projects I've done in the past, and there's some that come to mind, but I think the reason why I keep making work is also this process of discovery and evolution, and that's really important to me, that that the next work is going to reveal something new and different and more expansive.
That's a good answer. Okay. So, there's so many things I want to ask. You only have 15 minutes left. Okay. So.
Well, we could also talk about, like, the residency experience at Ma's house at some point, too.
True. We should talk about that. Okay, so, let's just talk about that now. What was your residency experience like?
The residency experience I don't want to set the bar too high for everyone else, but it was really incredible. And I thank Jeremy and Brianna and Kelly and Denise and Jeremy's dad and everyone. It felt very much like a community. And in your email before, you kind of had prompted, like, what were some of your favorite moments? And I have a funny anecdote, because, you know, I wasn't used to the town of Southampton very much. I've spent more time out in East Hampton, but I remember biking to the Mexican food place and ordering nachos and, just coming back, and there were so many nachos, and, Jeremy gave me his nacho oven heating up tips, and I don't know, it was just kind of a sweet little anecdote, but that was kind of a fun moment. I don't know why, just, you know, it's familial. You develop a bond with these folks, so ranging from things like
nachos.
Sorry?
I was just saying, you guys bonded over nachos.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, simultaneously, there was just this reckoning with colonial grief and, you know, just all of the loaded themes that I was experiencing while sleeping and living on unceded land. So, the second day, I think, of my residency, Shane Weeks happened to visit, and he was there, and we kind of immediately connected, and he was so generous in taking me to Sugarloaf, and we had a really powerful experience with a historic pestle, and I was already kind of collecting soil and stuff to grind down and make into this beautiful, like, Shinnecock indigenous soil pigment. And I do think we had sort of a spiritual experience because the pestle heated up as we approached the site of the land back site and stuff like that. So it was, you know, you got nachos in Southampton, you have like land back sites that, you know, I felt there was a deep bond there with some spirits or, you know, beings who were happy that this was being retransferred. There was a lot of learning on my end from, you know, I've experienced racism and discrimination, but also learning about an entirely different flip side to the coin of that, which is, you know, the Shinnecock and the indigenous folks of New York have been here for 10,000 years. And, you know, the last 300 or 400 years, it's pretty recent, but kind of, you know, thinking of the racism that and the violence that has accompanied life of this community of the last 100 years. Like, this was pretty, you know, it's different to learn about it in a textbook and then to actually be there. Mm-hmm. So that was really powerful. I wrote an artist statement in the solo exhibition, which maybe I'll just, I think I'm just going to read some of it.
Yeah, please do.
So this was, the show was November 16th to December 16th last year, 2021, called Les Parages. So that was the title of the dance film. So if through this work I can change how one person perceives soil, land, and the dialogue of elements, my work here is done. If through this work I can bring to light the power of this never surrendered land, my work here is done. And footnote, I want to say that, like, the land did feel and look very different to me, even just the ecology, right, compared to the surroundings of Southampton and the manicured lawns and all this stuff. The fact that the word culture originally comes from the root concept of cultivation has felt deeply and acutely present in my residency here. Cultivation is an act of care, an act of nurturing, an act of support and sustenance. For art to be considered a form of cultivation has never felt more right or true. To be here, to be welcomed, to learn and create on this never surrendered land of the Shinnecock has been transformative. Some days almost haunting. I've had spiritual encounters, undoubtedly, especially while visiting the first land back site on Sugarloaf Hill in Southampton. The visible and invisible energy of the land is tactile. The verdant biodiversity of plants and trees differs from the manicured rigidity of the surroundings. More land should look, feel, and sing like this. In 2021 is not the most fundamental, or in 2022 is not the most fundamental radical transformation needed in our society to be found in the recreation of our relationship between ourselves and land. For too long, the planet and people have been degraded by the violences of colonialism, capitalism, and white supremacy. In Marie-Monique Robin's book, The Fabric of Pandemics, she explains through her research with hundreds of scientists how the species of bat that disseminated COVID-19 was a climate migrant fleeing its original territory as a result of deforestation, which led to weaker immunity, ultimately resulting in the last 21 months, well now 2.5 years of our lives. So just, I think it's like one more minute. There's a grief I felt too, that the Indigenous people have had to endure so much violence and suffering. I understand that as a BIPOC, kind of Korean-American, French, diasporic female, having lived a certain breed of that, as did my ancestors. So definitely Korea has had its share of colonialism and whatnot. I've re-felt rage towards this colonialism that has exploited so much land from this local setting to the global scale. And realizing that we are feeling the blows of that violence in this age of extreme climate change hurts. While also feeling these aches and pains, it is a relief to be here. And the relief is so deep to be on this beautiful, never surrendered land, to be in a BIPOC art space. These people and this land are here living now, these 800 acres rustle in the wind with a beauty that is alive, rooted in a time that is deep, millennia. Even as I feel the scars, there is an incredible safety here. I am seen, I am welcomed by my peers, I am told to slow down, be myself, to learn, to lay into the land, the sea, and let it all hold me. So that's, I think that says a lot, and probably better than if I just start rambling. It's very fresh from that time. So, yeah.
That was a pretty amazing passage. Very well written, I have to say. That's...
Thank you. I'm happy to share it again and look at it, too. I mean, it, you know, you can kind of feel the emotion that was there.
Yeah. Definitely. You're scholars, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a researcher. I'm an assistant professor at Parsons, so I I gotta be able to work verbiosely kind of express myself at times.
Definitely sounded very scholarly, which is something I enjoy for sure. It's good, like, middle ground of artistic and scholarly just meeting together.
That's pretty nice. That's good. Yeah, sometimes I worry it gets a little bit too, you know, up in the clouds, but hopefully not.
Yeah, I don't know all your other passages, but that one in particular, I think that one's great. 10 out of 10. recommending it to everyone. Listen to that again.
We can figure out a way to share it too if it works on the website or directly in the podcast or whatever, you know, because
if there's like a link to it, we can definitely put it in the bottom of the, or not the bottom, but we'll put it in the description. It'll just be right under the podcast.
Great.
Okay, so we're nearing the end of the podcast, but there are a few more good questions. Okay, so I mean, you kind of, I think I know the answer to this question, but I would like to get a little more context to it. Do you believe in ghosts and spirits? And if you do, could you share a paranormal experience?
Oh my goodness. This is a great question. So yes, I have had encounters with, you know, spirits and beings and stuff. I recently had one again out east, but I think it was the ghost of Lee Krasner. She lived, you know, in the Jackson Pollock house for decades after he tragically died in that car accident, and I remember visiting and her bathroom was like fully red, like, which was very interesting to me. I'd never seen anything like that before. Like red curtains, red towels, you know, like not the walls, but all the accessories. And then it was in March of this year. And, basically it's a long story, but long story short, there was an unexplained red light bulb that turned on and turned off by itself. Unexplainably, and you know, the bulb was not actually red in, like, physically in our world, like when I went back to look at it. And yeah, the only explanation I could think of was that, you know, it was some kind of greeting or something. It didn't feel mean or scary or anything, but it was very shocking.
Wow.
Yeah. And yes, there was like experiences such as the heating up of the stone, which, you know, especially if you're there with two people, and it wasn't just myself, but if another person like Shane is there and he was like, oh yeah, this is happening. It's strange, you know. I think there's more to life than meets the eye.
Agreed. It's interesting that the red, usually when I experience anything paranormal in the color red, I'm like, uh-oh, this is not gonna be good, or there's some type of, I mean, usually I've just, my first thought is like, oh, there's a demon here or something. Mm-hmm. Maybe not a demon, but just something is angry if things are looking red. But red, but like maroon is also kind of like more like a godly spiritual color.
That's a really nice distinction. Yeah, I think it was, I mean, it was pretty red. It was like scarlet, but it, I mean, yeah.
That could also just be their color.
Right, exactly. Which is
interesting.
Yeah, and also red is the Moss House color, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. So I guess it's just my preconceived connotations of that. From my experience, there have been some other red rooms that I've been in, especially at like parties. I'm like, well, this is the bad demon room. Should not be in here.
Yeah, speaking of color, I have to say, staying at Ma's house really changed my experience of red. Like, I am, in my work, I'm, like, much more of a blue, black, tan, I mean, kind of in that spectrum, but, yeah, the red at Ma's house, I'm I'm more open to it. It feels energizing and exciting and passionate and, you know, engaging and all these things. Whereas before, I think I felt more like this connotation of like the demon and, you know, all this other stuff.
Yeah. It's hard to, I mean, I guess anything could be any color.
Right. But
it's like giving it new life. The color red, it's no longer necessarily bad. I have a lot of red around me now, actually. Mm-hmm. All my recording devices are red. And yeah, it's always interesting. I like to see the colors of like the what's the word for it? I guess not, for lack of a better term, coincidence, although it's not coincidence, it's just like the colors of the things, the recording is red, all this good stuff is just all makes alls together for some reason. I know that just made no sense. Anyone listening, sorry, I didn't articulate that properly. But hopefully you can get the gist of what I mean. Yeah. Okay. Well, you had a good answer. That was a good one. Okay. Okay, so is there something I should have asked you about, but I didn't?
Yeah, I think the first thing that comes to mind is maybe was this your first time at the Shinnecock Tribal Nation?
Oh, okay. Was this your first time?
It was not. The first time, this is kind of a cool story. So the first time I went out to the Hamptons, I think was in 2010 or maybe before 2009, 2010. It was for a festival that was on the Shinnecock the grounds, which when I told folks there, everyone was kind of surprised. They're like, oh, that's really rare. So it's kind of funny. My experience of the Hamptons, especially that first time, was so different from the preconceived notion of the Hamptons. So I ended up really enjoying it. And yeah. And then I went back many years later with another kind of, this other relationship. And we spent a lot of time up in Springs. Yeah, in East Hampton. But I somehow
was that powwow?
Yeah, I think it was a powwow, but there was also like a market and there was an overnight music festival. I think it was run by like I Love New York or something. I don't know if it continued. What? Yeah.
Definitely not. What the heck? How did I miss this? I didn't even know this happened. Did I even know they existed? I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, the folks who I told about it on the res, a lot of them did remember it. So it did happen. I mean, it could also be that, you know, maybe you were away
I was also like 12 years old and 11 or 12 back then. So,
oh my gosh. So young.
Yeah.
I'm dating myself. I was like maybe 20 or something. Yeah. Anyway, but, I somehow like dodged the bullet of, you know, going out to the Hamptons and you're surrounded by like a lot of drunk, ridiculously wealthy people and it's obnoxious and crazy. So, it's really nice and synchronous that, the residency kind of called me back to that space after all these years.
Pretty amazing. That's pretty rare. Someone, the first experience is in Southampton.
I know.
Shinnecock.
Yeah, it was really cool. And I hope to go back more now. And I've went back and visited, I think, a couple times or once or twice. Yeah, a couple times. And I steward a small slice of land. It's a very queer little piece of land out in East Hampton too. So whether you like it or not, I'm going to come back to Ma's house, Hunter.
You're more than welcome to. Are the powwow's coming any day now, Labor Day weekend.
So right. Like oh, man, that's really soon.
The first public powwow in like 2 or 3 years.
Wow.
So it's exciting. Very I'm actually exciting. Shooting a documentary there this year. over the next 2 years, great. Actually. Yeah. Wow, not all the equipment's come in yet, but 90% of it has, so hoping to get everything ready for that.
Oh, man. Yeah, there's always a lot cooking over at Ma's house. It's exciting.
Yeah. Always is. Mm-hmm. I know, right now kind of feels like everyone's taking like a breath before the, as I would call it, the shitstorm of powwow that we're going to
have. The calm before the storm.
Yeah, yeah, it's always insane.
Right. And especially after this long break, yeah. Mm-hmm. Our fall semester is starting in 3 days on Monday. And wow. Just like the middle to end of August always feels a little bit like impending doom. And it's so hot and humid and, you know, da, da, da. But, you know, it's always great when like the fresh September hits. You know, and you're like, oh, finally, it's all happening.
I can't wait for some nice cool walk outside and the air is cool. I can actually breathe a breath of fresh air instead of a breath of humid air, drinking water while I breathe.
Right. Yeah, no, it's nice for a couple of months. And then at this time, I feel like your body's kind of just like, get me out of this sludge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I can't do it anymore. I can't.
Yeah,
I've tried, and I've succeeded, but I'm ready for it to become a little cooler. Mm. It was actually also just in East Hampton yesterday, and I never go over there, like never really.
Yeah, it's funny how like divided it is. I mean, it is very long. It is Long Island, and the traffic is bad. But yeah, I'm not a local out there, so I think it's funny how people just like stay in their little. But I guess it's the same in the city. You just kind of stay in your neighborhood mostly.
At the area, yeah.
Yeah.
You only go if you have to, really. You're like, oh, I have to. And if you go, you're like, I'm going to go do 8 things over there since it's an hour away.
Wow.
Yeah, not really an hour. But it takes a long time to get there.
Exactly.
I only did one thing.
I didn't realize, because when I was at Ma's, before going to Ma's house, I thought, oh, I'll go to East Hampton all the time when I'm there. But in fact, I think I went once or something.
It's enough.
Yeah. Yeah, Jeremy and I are going to be, he's going to be shooting an upcoming project of mine in September in about a month, so that's really exciting, too. I'm happy that I'm, you know, able to be still connected. It feels like also a sense of community has developed through Ma's house. And, you know, I know artists are now coming from all over the world, which is incredible, but I'm, like, relatively local, so that's also been really nice to have this experience and, like, have it flourish and develop in different ways.
Yeah, you're pretty close by.
Yeah.
Relatively close
just
by.
Just a Long Island Railroad trip away. 2 hours.
Yeah. It feels like I'm like, Brooklyn feels so close, but yeah, it is so far. And then, because the damn traffic and travel time.
Right. Yeah.
All right. So this is the last question.
Okay.
Do you have any questions for me?
Oh yeah. How did you become an artist, and how has this experience of working at Ma's house kind of changed your work?
Oh my god, how did I become an artist? That's a good one. Let's see. Okay, I'm gonna take everyone way back, which is like 15 years, I guess. Mm. I was like really into making videos with my friends. We got like these, there was these flip camcorders, I guess they were called. Mm. It was just like a brick with a camera on the other side. So we'd make like stupid YouTube videos and stuff. And then we kind of stopped as we got older, but I always came up with like video ideas. I was like, oh, it'd be fun to make a TV show. And then I went to school and I went to college, did not finish college. But when I was there, I was like not doing as good as I should have been because I didn't really care about what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is like a big, it's like, that's not how it works for everybody. People can tough it out, but for me, I just could not. I've always been pretty good at like test taking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I should have been doing better if I was like giving like 35% effort. I just could not do it.
Hmm.
So then I left and then wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And then I really, really, really thought about it for like a few months. And I was like, I want to make videos and music videos and work with other artists and eventually go into TV and movies and tell like storytelling is basically storytelling, comedy, all that type of stuff.
Cool.
So I actually then moved to Philadelphia with three artists and kind of just started cultivating myself and trying to work with them. And then actually I ended up not working with them as much as I was hoping I'd end up working with them. But I had some other friends who are extremely talented. And so I started working with them much more. And I realized I liked it. And I, although it was like, I will say I'm much better now than I was then. I could see there was potential. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to keep trying to do this. And then here I am now, fast forward. And then working at my, I guess the second part of the question, working at Mouse House, the amount of work and the people I have to do. So like the other artists are inspiring because they all do these amazing things. I'm like, oh, that's pretty cool. Let's see how I can maybe use what they've done to bolster my skills. Like, oh, this is, so they did this for that. Maybe I could add that technique into me, into what I do. And yeah, and now that I'm in Southampton more, just being surrounded by artists makes me want to make more art. It's really who you're surrounded by. Used to be surrounded by capitalists all the time, and it still rubs off on me. Like, I am in somewhat of a capitalistic mind just because that's what I was interested in somewhat, like marketing and stuff. But you need money to make TV shows, so I gotta have a little
bit
in my
it's
head.
It's hard to escape fully capitalism, you know? I think it's a... But it's kind of your choosing what to focus on, you know? And I'm also more in this school of, like, I have to care about what I do in order to excel. And it's nice to hear that it sounds like it's been a mix of your own passion but also being surrounded with the right people. It sounds like it's kind of helping you carry it on.
I guess I'll share some advice with everybody listening. If you don't know, if you don't like what you're doing, try to find some new people to hang out with, because they will introduce you to a lot of new things. And you, honestly, you know, say you become, you're kind of like the everyone you hang out with kind of turns into you, kind of turn into them. If you're hanging out with people who aren't doing great things, you're definitely not going to, you're more than likely not going to do great things, just because they're not really holding you back, but they're holding you back in the end. They're kind of just dragging you down with them.
This is a great also tie into Ma's House, because I felt I think a large part of being in residency there is to also being in community with Jeremy, right? And yeah, so that definitely was kind of a, you know, I'm searching for the right word, you know, a really nice current to push you forward in ways that you wouldn't you know.
Jeremy's a wave. You gotta ride the wave or he'll crash you down.
No, totally. There's just so much going on, so much ambition, and yeah, I think, and definitely Brianna, I think she had moved in really relatively recently when I got there too, but also having her work and, you know, also just as you said, being in dialogue with all these different voices and, talent, definitely lifts your work up
100%.
To a higher standard, and yeah, and just like the breakneck speed, it was just like, oh my god, that was I think that was largely self-motivated, though. There was you know, I think also everyone creates something new and different and special there of their own, you know, with their own kind of personality traits when they're there too, like whether that's you know, the big mandala, or you know, some people I think focused more on like workshop and education. You know, there's no like one right way to experience it. It's, but, you know, ideally you grow and you do something unexpected and new and, yeah.
Well said. Okay, well, this time of the podcast, I wanted to give you this opportunity to just plug your social medias, your websites, where people can read the article. And not really article, the statement.
Yes, it was the artist statement. Yeah.
Yes. I've actually never written an artist statement. Hopefully one day I do. Okay, and you can endorse anything you want to endorse. It's just your time to say whatever you want.
Well, I have not yet put that text up publicly anywhere, but I will do so on my website. My website is ateliedegest.com. So ateliedegest.com. It's my studio name that I started right out of graduate school, and it just means the studio of gesture, which I think was a nice way and still is to encompass like all the different kind of creative work that I do. The social media handle, I only use Instagram, and lately I haven't been on it that much, but you know, it goes through waves. If there's like, there's a couple big things coming up in the fall, so I'm sure I'll be on it. The handle is Atelier de Geste, also ateliedegeste. I don't have too many other social media things. I'm kind of hosting a hack Spotify podcast called Body Space Ecology, and that has some interesting conversations around ecology, race, the future of biomaterials, like algae, stuff like that. So if you're interested in that, it's called Body Space Ecology, and it's on, I think, Apple and Spotify podcasts. Yeah, there's a link on the website to sign up for newsletters if you're interested in finding out more about kind of my work. I send them out about maybe 3-4 times a year when there's exhibitions or performances or something interesting happening. And yeah, everyone should check out also the amazing New York Times article about Moss House. I was so thrilled to have some images of my work featured in it, and it does a great job telling the story of how, you know, how the space was created and how it's developing. So yeah, I think that's it. If you want to reach out, or have any questions, the email is also on the website, but, you can just email studio@ateliedegeste.com. I love hearing from people, especially if you're in this fold, and, you know, I like to feel that we're a community. I try and stay in touch with the folks I met there through social media and stuff. So, yeah, thank you, Hunter. I think that's all.
Yeah, no problem. I'm going to put all that stuff in the description so people can check it out easily. I know having to listen and spell things gets a little confusing. Like that. But yeah, thank you so much for being on. It was great.
Thank you. I'm so glad. And all right, talk to you soon.
Yeah. Thank you. This is the Moss House podcast. Thank you guys for listening. Hopefully everyone made it to the end. If you did, you're my favorite, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Mine too. Okay. <Yeah. laughs>